Welcome to Beyond the Wish, where we delve into the power of wishes and the people who make them possible. Today, we are celebrating our 40th birthday here at Make-A-Wish Illinois, and there's no better way to honor this incredible milestone than speaking with our founder, Diane McWilliams. Diane is taking us back to the first days of our chapter, the challenges, the triumphs, and everything behind building a movement that has brought hope and joy to nearly 20,000 children across the state of Illinois. Her story is one of compassion, determination, and the power of community. Whether you've been part of the Make-A-Wish family for years or just discovering the impact of a wish, this episode will remind you why it all matters and how one person can spark a legacy of kindness that will last for decades to come. Welcome to Beyond the Wish. Thank you for joining us today. Diane, can you start by introducing yourself and who you are and your relation to Make-A-Wish?
So my name is Diane McWilliams, and back 40 years ago in 1985, I had the opportunity to help start the Make-A-Wish at that time of Illinois chapter, along with a few other people, and it was one of the best decisions and best times of my life.
And normally when I have people on the podcast, I always ask kind of what their first introduction to Make-A-Wish Illinois is, but we're in a very unique situation that there wasn't a Make-A-Wish Illinois when you were kind of introduced to the organization. So how did you get started and I guess get to the position of starting this chapter?
So back in 1983, my son Russell was born, and he was born with a very rare genetic illness. And his life was actually a five-year life, but it was a life-and-death battle most of the time. He lacked an amino acid, arginine, which removes ammonia from your system. So he was virtually being poisoned by his own ammonia. He had brain damage from having seizures. He had a lot of delay in development, but he was a wonderful little guy. So with that, I was always having to be very strong and not show my grief and my sadness. And so I would, in privacy, find things like articles that made me cry. And so I read about Make-A-Wish in a Better Homes and Garden or something. And I just thought it was an amazing organization, and it was something that really touched me, and I thought there was such a need for it. But at that time, there was only a place down in Phoenix. It was the national area. It was the national chapter and the Phoenix chapter. And so there was nothing in Illinois. So we made a donation that year. My company, Quicksilver, made a donation in honor of our employees and our clients and sent out a Christmas card, you know, stating that and what Make-A-Wish was about. And boy, the reaction to that was amazing. I mean, people were really their hearts were touched by it. And so that was a great thing. And about 6 months later, one of my colleagues who was in production was working on the Million Dollar Roundtable meeting, which is a association of life insurance brokers. And they were honoring Make-A-Wish that year with a check and had them at their national meeting. And so she had the chance to meet with them, but also at that meeting they had asked everybody in the audience, because they were from all over the country, to think about starting a chapter of Make-A-Wish in their state. So she came back and literally a couple days later, so excited, called me and said, "Hey, would you like to help start a chapter of Make-A-Wish?" And that was the beginning.
That's incredible. That's a great story, and kind of the stars aligning and the ripple effect that we see so often here at Make-A-Wish of one person tells somebody else and it turns into this incredible thing that is now turning 40 years old.
And right. Who can believe that?
19,000 wishes here in Illinois. Once you were kind of informed that they're looking for people to start chapters in their home states, what was that process like? How did you get that off the ground and into action?
So it was a very different time, 1985. We did not have We didn't have email. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have computers. We didn't have cell phones. So everything was really done by phone calls and, you know, personal contact and that sort of way. And so we decided we would start this. Well, we knew that we needed a 501c3. And so we investigated on how to get that. And then everything else, we thought, oh, we'll go to National and get the how-to book from them. Well, there was no how-to book, not at all. Actually, National at that point was like really a one-person operation, and it was out of the Phoenix chapter. So, you know, they really didn't have anything other than what they had done, a little bit of information. There were a couple other chapters, though, out there, one in Colorado that really helped us, you know a little bit more about what we needed to do and what to expect. And so we you know, went with that, and it was really a thing that we were just excited and energetic and really naive. And there was a whole bunch of magic that happened from all of that. Mm-hmm. So things just started falling in place. And we put together a board of several of our friends. One was a videographer. One was an accountant, a CPA. Another one was a real estate person. And so, I mean, they were just from different walks of life, but none of them had ever started anything like a not-for-profit before. So we had to learn. We had to learn what we're doing. We knew we needed to give ourselves some time, too, that we needed probably a year before we really even started granting wishes. But I had offices on Ontario Street in old buildings and old mansions. And so one of those offices was available. So we set up a desk and an answering machine. Oh, boy. And we had nobody working in there. But, you know, some of my employees would walk by and hear the phone ring or whatever, and the answering machine, and they'd let me know that, you know, we'd gotten a message. So we decided that we needed to at least get some volunteers going. So we sent out, well, first of all, there was actually a article in the Tribune that was written about us. And so that kind of opened the floodgates for lots of people to call in. So the next thing was, let's organize a volunteer meeting. And so in my conference room, you know, on a Saturday, I put out a notice to all these people who had called and said they wanted to be volunteers. And in came probably over 100 people at least. Wow. And so we had some little questionnaires of, you know, what they would be interested in doing. And out of that came these two wonderful ladies, Harriet Johnson and Anne Shaheen. And the two of them were retired. They were probably my age then. They had retired, and they were professional secretaries. So they came in and just took over the office. And they would come like every couple of days and get, you know, things off the answering machine. Anne ultimately became our board secretary, and she was taking shorthand and typing up minutes. So it was a real hands-on operation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, miraculously, in no time, we were off and running. So about 6 months later, we did get our 501c3, the provisional one. And so we were able to get a bank account. Woohoo. And everybody on the board put in a little bit of money so that we could start, you know, buying some of the things that we needed to do. But at that point, we could get a bank account. That was the big thing.
So who was the core group of people that were helping you along your way of building Make-A-Wish Illinois into what it is?
So the core people were really, first of all, a handful of people that we knew from business. And then as that volunteer call went out and people came in, there were many people that had, you could just see they had expertise in different areas. So, you know, fundraising or wish grant, well, nobody had actually any experience in wish granting, but they had that kind of, you know, they wanted to do that. That was what they were interested in. And then there were other people that just wanted to come in the office and help. So that was how we just found them. We just started building them. And then people were coming to the door of my office, of my offices at Quiksilver, and wanting to make donations and get involved. So, you know, you take down all that information and, you know, it was just unbelievable how people came together from all walks of life. And so our core group of original volunteers really came from that little meeting and that call for volunteers, and they became our little family.
And community is what I think wishes are all about. It's the power of bringing people together and just rallying around the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, there wasn't even the wish stories to share out because it was, you were still trying to get the funds to be able to grant a wish. Right. What kind of challenges did you face with getting that community support in the early days, especially because it's not even just Make-A-Wish Illinois being mm-hmm. a new nonprofit, but Make-A-Wish America was also relatively new. So what were kind of some of those challenges getting support?
So how did we get the word out about Make-A-Wish? Well, first of all, there was that article in the Tribune, and that just had huge response, like I said, from, you know, people making phone calls to us, to people showing up at the door, all that sort of thing. So that helped get us started. And even the people that were in the hospitals, you know, had heard about us then at that point because they'd read about it too. So we knew we needed to build relationships with hospitals and some kind of really personal kinds of relationships with them. So the hospitals that had pediatric wards and child life groups, I don't know if they have those anymore, but that's what they were called back then, we got in touch with them in the various hospitals and started planning some kind of an event to hold there where the kids that were in the hospital at the time could come and the families that were there, and they could learn a little bit about Make-A-Wish but also have a good time. So I had been at my aunt's 80th birthday in Iowa, and there was some woman there that was talking about going to nursing homes with all these hats that she had bought at thrift stores and having hat parties and how great that was. And so that was something I brought to them. Nobody really wanted us to use used hats on kids, but so we wound up going and getting hats that were, you know, some they made into animal shapes or whatever. And it was really kind of fun. But the other thing I learned when my son was in the hospital were how many kids that didn't really have close family that could come to the hospital to be with them and be there all the time. And so we were there one time, and I had a Polaroid camera for my son. So it was a Halloween party, and there was a little girl there who was by herself, and she said, "Could you take a picture of me? My parents don't have a picture of me." Aww. And so it broke my heart, but it made me think, how many kids would like to have their pictures taken, or their families have the mm-hmm. picture of their child as well, you know? So that's what we did. We brought in Polaroid cameras and took pictures, and we had little folders that had Make-A-Wish on them that gave them a touch point with us. And from that, the child life people loved us, and the doctors started hearing about us. And so pretty soon we had their support too. But that was sort of before we did our first wish. We started thinking about those kinds of things and putting that together. At the same time, we were going towards, when are we going to do our first wish? Mm-hmm.
And how do you think your experience with a complex medical journey with your son played into your passion for the mission and being able to relate and provide for these families?
You know, I think his life, as short as it was, has great meaning because he inspired me, and he inspired some of the other people too, because they met him and saw him and interacted with him, and they inspired all of us to get this thing going, right? And so here it is, you know. Well, the first years that we were doing, you know, 3 or 4 wishes, and then 10 wishes, and then 20 wishes, and, you know, it grew like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's just unbelievable now that you've done as many wishes as, would you say, 19,000?
Yeah, we're, I think, just over 19.
Over 19,000. Yeah. That says something about his life. So it gives me that to think about, that, you know, he still lives in a certain way because he was my inspiration, and that's what got this chapter off the ground.
Legacy, especially looking at 40 years this year.
Yeah.
And it's been such a tremendous time to look back and reflect of kind of where we are and where we're going, and even just walking into our conference room where we have all the stars with all the names of all the wishes granted, and just seeing how progressively bigger the stars get, because as the years went on, we were granting more and more wishes. And
absolutely. No one, I mean,
yeah,
who could believe that we could grant that many wishes in a year? Mm-hmm. And it, obviously it takes an army to do that at this point, and you've got one. I mean, we didn't have any. So the next big thing was that we hired an executive director in like year two, towards the end of year two. And it was a woman, it was actually the woman who had come to me to start the chapter. She wanted to become the executive director. So she was, and only for a short period of time, though, because she wound up getting married and moving to California. So we were looking for another one, and one of our first volunteers was Paula Giovacchini. And Paula happened to have a sister that was, you know, she thought was going to be the right person for us for Make-A-Wish. And we interviewed a number of people, and then we brought them into our conference room with our board to interview with the board. And in came Linda Park today. She was Linda Giovacchini. Anyway, and she came in, and she made herself just right away. Everybody knew it was her. They knew that she had to be the person. And in the middle of the interview, she spilled an entire glass of water on her impeccable suit that she was wearing. And we knew that's the person. We need to hire her. She's genuine. And I think, you know, everybody that's ever met Linda knows that. But that was a big turning point for Make-A-Wish.
And for those who may not know, Linda still works for Make-A-Wish. She's here and has impacted the chapter in so many incredible ways. And she was the second episode of our podcast. So you can go back and listen to Linda's full history of her time at Make-A-Wish. So can you share about the first wish that the chapter granted?
So the first wish was, we weren't ready, really. You know, we hadn't, the year that we'd given ourselves was not up. But out of, like, everything, you know, the phone rings, and it was an uncle of a little girl who, he was in Colorado, and he'd heard about Make-A-Wish in Colorado, so he went to find out if there was a chapter in Illinois and found us. And he had a niece who had some kind of a nerve degeneration disease, and she was failing quickly. And so he asked if we could do a wish, and we brought it back to the board, and we said, yeah, let's do this. This is the one we need to do. So we needed to figure out how to do a wish, right? She wanted to go, she wanted was to go to Disney World. She wanted to meet Minnie Mouse and Mickey Mouse. And so we had to put that together. But at that time, there was an organization that was in Florida that was out of the Holiday Inns, where that was kind of a clearinghouse for kids that, you know, or for wish organizations for kids that wanted to go to Disney World. And they would find the hotel rooms that were available and get that all arranged for you. They also got arranged, they had a relationship with Disney World, so they would get the kids these passes to get them into Disney World that gave them, you know, opportunities to go to the front of the line, you know, to go to special little places for snacks and treats and things, places to rest during the day. And they did and they also had a character, you know, character meetings for them so that they could meet the characters. And so it all came together unbeknownst to us, but that was probably a big thing because we were now doing the steps that you needed to do to make a wish come true. And we had never done it before. And it turns out at that point that Disney World was probably one of the, you know, most premier requested wishes that you could have, but we learned from that. Mm-hmm. And it was a huge success. And the family came back, you know, very, very appreciative and just, you know, blown away really by the experience. And then the board was blown away by the experience that it all came together. We also had to borrow money from Make-A-Wish National. There was a fund there so that if you didn't have enough money when you're starting out, you could do it. Or sometimes some of these chapters don't have a lot of money. So there was a fund that you could draw on, and there was no wish that would go ungranted.
I can only imagine the energy of all the volunteers who are helping kind of get to this point. I think that's what feels like the kickoff to a chapter's. We granted a wish. Here we made it.
Here we go. Right.
What was that feeling like when you're sending that family off and they come back and they had this incredible time at Disney?
How does that feel? It's just an enormous, wonderful thing. And you want to do it for many, many more kids, obviously, because, you know, you can. And you know, but there are still processes and procedures to get there, right? So there weren't any of those, like a handbook of those. And so from that wish, we were able to create a lot of that, too. So as we went forward, we would have the experiences and accumulate them and know what worked and what didn't work. And most of the time, things worked pretty darn good. So again, magic and make a wish.
Mm-hmm. After the first wish, what was the growth there? Like, what happened after that first wish to kind of keep the momentum going?
With that experience, we were able to talk really, you know, fluently about what it took to do a wish. So stories are always the things that attract people to make a wish. When they don't, they just come and kind of, well, what's this all about? And so at that point, we had our first story and we wanted more. And we went to the child life departments and were able to say, here's what we've done. And, you know, we're looking to meet families that, you know, need this kind of a wish or need a wish. And so that kind of opened the floodgates at these hospitals, and they started referring people to us, and the referrals started coming in, you know, four or five or whatever, and we were able to work on them, and they were all different kinds of wishes at that point. So, you know, each one then had a whole slew of activity that you had to do to make it come true. And the thing was, it wasn't just to make it come true, but to really make it special. That was the energy that came from everything. Was everything we did had to be beyond what you would normally experience if you were experiencing that thing. And our wish granters, they all came in just, that's exactly what they wanted to do. And they would come up with very creative ideas on how to do it and how to make that family feel like they're the only ones in the world right now getting a wish.
What was the learning curve to that? Because it's such a unique experience. And Disney, I feel like, is still one of our most requested wishes. And it's unique to each kid and built around what they're interested in. But we have such a vast experience now from mm-hmm. all the wishes that we've granted, but you're starting from nothing.
Right.
So what was your process and the learning curve around when a new kid is referred and they request a wish that you have never not done. Granted yet?
It was always a learning curve. I mean, for the many years that I was, you know, involved at a board level and, you know, more hands-on on Make-A-Wish, it was always a learning curve. I'm thinking probably even now there are wishes that come in that are a learning curve. But we were all doing it with volunteers. It was all volunteer. And until, you know, we obviously got a first executive director and I think we had one other office person, two people that were, you know, in the office. But otherwise, they were, you know, looking at people that you know, had come in and just signed up to be volunteers. So you'd put a team together and they would work on it and they would have to, you know, bring things to the board that they were looking for. They would have to go out into the community to look for things. We were really trying to do wishes with mostly donated, you know, things as opposed to, you know, something costing anything. So there was no end to what we wouldn't ask for, right? But anyway, so that was the learning curve. Was each and every wish had its own uniqueness to it. There's no real cookie cutter. Even Disney World wishes really aren't just cookie cutter. And that, you know, we had to make an experience that was good because the children were all different too. They had different, you know, levels of mobility or, you know, communication ability or whatever. So, and all the families were different. They came from every walk of life. And, you know, it didn't matter. It was, that's what we were here to do. We were here to grant the wishes of kids, all of them that came to us that qualified for a wish.
What were those referral numbers kind of in those early days? Because as someone who started only like a few years ago and interning with the referral team as well, like, we see like huge numbers coming in, like 100 some a month or so.
Well, fortunately, we didn't, like I said, have an internet or, or email.
I guess that helps, yeah.
So, you know, we were growing at that same time where that stuff was growing too. But, you know, so at the beginning, you know, it wasn't that bad because we started with one hospital. We really focused at the beginning on what was Children's Memorial Hospital. Mm-hmm. I think it's Lori's now. And, you know, so that was the one that we started with. And we knew we had limitations at that point. But we knew we also wanted to expand as fast as possible. So, you know, that was sort of how they came in, you know, maybe a few at a time. And then the doctors that we were kind of interacting with too, they you know, their time and what effort they wanted to put into it would be, you know, also a matter of how many kids that they would refer.
And just in the first kind of few years of Make-A-Wish Illinois being a chapter and actively granting wishes, if you were to imagine Make-A-Wish 10 years down the line, what did you envision for like the number of wishes that you thought that the Illinois chapter could grant at the time?
I could give you that exact amount because I brought a strategic plan with me.
Oh!
that has those exact numbers, but off the top of my head, I would have to look at that again. But I think we were looking in 10 years at doing, you know, like maybe 200 wishes a year. And having a bigger staff, mm-hmm. obviously, too, all those things were in that strategic plan. And I got to tell you, whatever was in there, it all happened and more. So we were, you know, I think we were trying to be real optimistic. And instead, we beat all the goals every year, year after year.
That's incredible.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we became the chapter, I think, that helped a lot of other chapters get started. A lot of the things, as we developed our board, there were people that came on, lawyers and, you know, other people that came on that had a lot of business experience. So we developed a lot of very business-like, you know, processes and procedures that other chapters that were, you know, maybe born in a church basement or something didn't have. And so we were able to share that with National, and then they were able to, you know, get it out to all the new chapters that were coming on board. Because that first year that we came on board, there were a number of chapters that started coming on board, again, all through these people from the Million Dollar Roundtable.
And you served on the National Board as well.
Mm-hmm.
What was that experience like going from your local community, literally like your office space, to having the broad overview of all the chapters?
So I started actually on committees with National before I went on the board. And one of the things, because my profession was, you know, in marketing and communications. So I went on committees. And one of the first things that, because we did a lot of big meetings for corporations. So one of the first things when I went to a Make-A-Wish national meeting that was the annual meeting, it was quite small then, but it was growing, that it was very poorly put together at that point. It was, you know, nice to be there and meet all these other people, but the meeting itself didn't really have a lot of focus and you know, look towards the future and all that sort of thing. So I really helped, you know, them take that meeting and make it into a very professional and well-run and well-planned meeting, and it really helped. So that was how, you know, so I had experience with National at that point, and because people knew me, they asked me if I would want to be a board member. And back then, the board members, many of them were just people like me from a chapter, and so it was, you know, I thought, okay, that's probably my next thing to do. So I was on the board here. I wasn't the chairman of the board because I had a sick child, and I knew that I couldn't be that person for several years. And ultimately, then I was the chairman of the board and had to pass that on to other people. And so it was in 1996 that I wound up on the national board. And it was a different experience because it was also growing. It was very local, like I said, a lot of local chapter people, and they were putting on more and more, you know, people from big corporations, CEOs, people like that, that hadn't had that, you know, local hands-on experience. So they were trying to take it a step above that. And there was a lot of mixed emotions about that because still people were developing chapters, and we needed to make sure that kind of grassroots part of it didn't go away.
Mm-hmm. Can you give a timeline of your work with Make-A-Wish? And just from kind of the beginning of this chapter to your involvement on the Illinois board to Make-A-Wish America.
Obviously, having started the chapter, I was on the board. And so I started in 1985, and I was on the Make-A-Wish of Northern Illinois board from 1985 to 1994. And during that time, I also was on a variety of committees at the national level, including the Conference Planning Committee, and also the when we started developing websites, I was on the web committee of how we would do that, and then ultimately on the brand committee where we developed a new logo for Make-A-Wish. And so that was all going on while I was still on the Illinois board, and then I was asked to be on the national board, and that was from 1996 through to 2002.
Okay.
So it was 2 3-year terms, and that's there were term limits, which was fine. And so I was off in 2002.
For you, what moments stick out as a pivotal point for our chapter's growth?
Well, I think it was when we hired our executive director. That was when we, I think changed from being all volunteer and adding staff. And I think it was really needed at that point, because as we grew and there was so much exposure and so many wishes going on at once and all of that, it needed to be all, kind of reeled into one place and one office. And so the growth of the amount of staff we had really helped us grow the organization in general.
What does it mean for you personally to see us coming up on 40 years and being with us for that whole ride?
I'm so absolutely proud of the accomplishments of this chapter and of Make-A-Wish in general, but of this chapter, the people here have always gone way beyond, no matter whether they're staff or volunteers or whatever, and I'm so proud of it, because how can you get to 19,000 wishes in 40 years? I mean, it's like unbelievable to me. So I appreciate every single person, from the staff to the volunteers to the families that have come forward, and the families that come forward and share with each other and inspire other families to have a wish is really important too. So it's been one of the most unique and absolutely meaningful experiences of my life.
And what do you hope to see from Make-A-Wish for the next 40 years?
Well, that's exactly it. Looking back at 40 years is one thing, but I think today is the day that we're going to go forward for 40 years. And things will change a lot too, because everything is changing out there in the world. I don't know what AI will have to do with our wishes, and I don't know, what other technologies will happen, but there will. It seems that there will always be an audience for this.
Mm-hmm. I think in one of our other episodes, somebody had mentioned that kids are still going to get sick, and they're still going to need wishes, and that that need isn't going away, and we'll be here for the wish kids who need us.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's all about.
The last question I have for you is, what would you like to share with people who are interested in kind of getting involved further with Make-A-Wish?
Okay, for anybody who wants to get involved with Make-A-Wish, I think that you absolutely should. I think you'll learn so much about life and people and what's really, really important, and have the most uplifting experience of your life.
And is there anything else you would want to add for people who are listening today?
I guess the one thing I'd like to share with everybody is that 40 years ago, I was very young and pretty naive, but look what can happen. look what can happen if you just take your energy and your imagination and want to make the world a better place.
And you did. That spark of joy and inspiration to bring that to kids across Illinois has lived on for 40 years and for forever on.
It's great.
Been amazing. And thank you so much for coming in today and taking time out of your visit to Chicago to come by and visit us. Thank you for joining us.
And thank you for being here.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Beyond the Wish. A huge thank you to our founder, Diane McWilliams, for sharing the heart and history behind our chapter and for kicking off our 40th birthday celebration. We've got a full year of joy, reflection, and surprises ahead, and we want you to be part of every moment. Make sure to follow us on social media to stay in the loop of all the festivities, stories, and ways that you can join in. Trust me, you don't want to miss what's coming next. Thanks for listening, and here's to 40 years of impact and many more to come. Until next time, best wishes.